Welcome to the Teen Life Podcast, where we equip, encourage, and empower the helpers of teenagers. Hey guys, this is Chris Roby, and this is my co-host, Carly Duke.
Hey guys, welcome.
Hey guys, welcome back. We are so glad to be speaking with Tashara Jackson, who is an intervention specialist in Keller ISD and has worked with Teen Life for quite a few years, however many years it's been. It's been a while.
At least five. I think it's been six since I started working with you.
Yeah.
So we've had a long relationship with Tashara, and today we want to talk about race. We want to talk about students, teenagers' interactions with race, and how systemic equality really falls heavy on students of color. And we're going to talk about a lot of things today. But we're really glad to have you here, Tashara. So just getting started, sitting down with us two white people, with everything going on right now, what would you want us to know right now?
First, let me start off with, I am not offended. You can call me black. You can call me African-American. My preference is black. Mm-hmm. And that I can only speak for myself. I am not an expert on black culture. I'm an expert on Tashara's culture. And I can just give you my perspective. But I'm here to answer the questions that I can answer and provide some resources, and to have a good, healthy conversation.
Awesome.
Well, with that, that's been, I know in my white circles, that has been a huge topic of conversation. How do we even talk about this? Mm-hmm. Because the killing of George Floyd has obviously in the black community had an outsized impact. This is, as I talked to my black friends, this is another killing of a black man by a police mm-hmm. officer. This has a long history. Mm-hmm. But all of a sudden, all of my white friends have woken up to say, oh, mm-hmm. this can't happen again. But also they want to know, how do we even talk about this? So as a black woman, how do we talk about this?
I like how you started with your vulnerability of, I don't know, and I want to know. And it's understood that black people have been black our whole lives. So in terms of racial identity, we are further along in our racial identity development than white people. And so it's understood that you're going to stumble as you go through your identity process, if that makes sense. And to admit that from the beginning, but also know that even stumbles can hurt other people. So just be brave enough to start the conversation, because we don't want to start the conversation. We're dealing with our own trauma, and we don't have the capacity to take care of other people and their feelings right now. Mm. We don't. So if you want to start the conversation, go to a black person that you trust and say, hey, can I talk to you? And they're either going to say yes or no. And just start with there. And it might be no, but I have some resources I can give you if you want to learn something. Mm-hmm. Because again, we're dealing with our own trauma in all of this. So just opening the door and broaching the subject, you have to be the one to do that.
I love that. I think it's key that you said someone that you trust, and having that relationship there, because I see so many white people reaching out to black people they don't even know and are like, hey, answer this for me. Hey, tell me this. What do I do now? And I think, I don't know, but I could only imagine how exhausting that must be mm-hmm. as a black person, having to answer all these people's questions that you don't even know them. But just, I do feel like we have that relationship, and I have been corrected on this in the past. And so I'm curious, you kind of talked about this, but what language do we use to talk about Black people? There's Black, there's African-American, there's people of color. Mm-hmm. Is there a right and wrong?
It kind of depends on the context. I remember in one of my groups, and the student was genuinely trying to use the right terminology, and she said, "Well, colored people, hold on, baby." I said, "There's a big difference between colored people and people of color." Uh-huh. It's a teachable moment. But it depends on the context, because sometimes people will use the term people of color when no, we need you to say Black people, because in this instance, it is Black people. Some people prefer to be called African American. Some people have no preference. Some people prefer to be called Black. One person said the other day to me, in a professional setting, you say African American. In a more casual setting, you can say Black if that's what the person is comfortable with. So
person of color tends to
person of color means Black, Latinx, Asian, Hispanic, any person who's not white. Our Southeast Asian, Pacific Islander, all of that encompasses persons of color.
Awesome. And
so at the systemic level, we're talking a lot about systems and how this is exposed even further, deep inequities in all the systems that really benefit more white people than people of color, I would say, just as a broad stroke. But like you said, you can speak for you and what you see. Where do you see inequities, especially in public and education? You know, and we're not necessarily just talking about, you know, your specific school, but where do you see inequities with students of color in public education?
So I did my dissertation on dropout trends and why do some students choose to drop out and how do they come to that decision. And in doing my research, students of color are more likely to have disciplinary referrals. They are more likely to have low grades. They are more likely to be pushed out the school system, meaning they don't feel wanted within the schools. They're more likely to be pulled out the school system, meaning they have obligations outside of school. It could be work, it could be taking care of the family, being a teen parent, that pull them out of the school system. Whether it's our male students, Black males are more likely to be sent to alternative schools, period. But if we look even by gender, Black female students are more likely to be sent than white students. Hispanic students are less likely to be sent than Black students, but more likely to be sent than white students. Even within the Asian community, South Pacific Asians are more likely to be get referrals than those who are on the main continent of Asia. There's different things. And if we look at it, so what affects that? We did a training in my district on racism and social injustice and inequities. And the presenter, and it escapes me what the name of it was, but the presenter said, talked about the well water, the groundwater. That the waters, if we see all this from different tributaries, what's the source? The source is the groundwater, and the groundwater is racism in our country. Our country is built on racism. So it affects school policy, it affects criminal justice policy, it affects housing policies. If we look at who has home ownership and all that now, part of that was based on a lot of people who were able to get homes in the 50s and all that is because of GI bills. Well, the GI bills were still established in such a way that Black people could not get them or could not move to where they wanted to move because of redlining districts. Mm-hmm. If you look at the history of where interstates were built to cut through Black communities and to disconnect them. And so it's just little things. When I was working in another school district. I was in a middle school, and the social studies teacher had her, I believe they were sixth graders. They did a project on a Walmart in the suburbs and a Walmart in an urban area. And it was just learning about the difference between urban and suburban. And the differences that they showed in just the Walmarts was just, was stark. And I was like, wow, wow. And what do we have access to? What do we have access to? Banks? Do we have access, or is it just check cashing places? Do we have access to grocery stores that have fresh food items, or is it just dollar stores? There was an initiative in Fort Worth recently about limiting the number of dollar stores in certain areas because that's all that was there. We have food deserts, but all of that inevitably affects what goes on in education, because this is what our kids are coming into school with. Mm. And then to be coming into school with that and still be stigmatized, it's just one thing after another. And so our kids are coming, some of our kids are coming in with more burdens than others.
Mm. So you got me, this is a bit of a tangent. It's not really a tangent, but can you talk a little bit about the school to prison pipeline idea? Because you talked about young Black men, and I've read more disproportionately with learning disabilities, mm-hmm. are sent to alternative schools, third parties, suspended, expelled, mm-hmm. Like you said, pulled out of the classroom. As I hadn't thought as much about the other side of that of work or being a parent, pulling them out as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've thought more about that, about being third party and, mm-hmm. and the effects that that has on dropout rates and then dropout rates to the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. Can you say a few words about that idea?
So, first of all, if you have not watched Documentary 13th on Netflix, please watch it, because that's exactly what the whole documentary, couldn't get that word out, is about.
That's a tough one.
So from my understanding, and I'm not well versed on this, but from my understanding, prison populations are based upon third grade discipline records or third grade in general discipline records and reading and test scores. Mm-hmm. And that's how they determine. So our kids are tracked at third grade. Hmm. And it shouldn't, first of all, there shouldn't even be a pipeline. Mm-hmm.
Right.
First of all. Secondly, so we're determining a kid's future based on third grade?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're still trying to become fluent in reading at third grade. You know, we're still figuring out our identities and all that, but we're going to it just perplexes me. It really does. But that is the school to prison pipeline. And then as you progress, we have school resource officers in schools, and yes, they're needed. As a person who works in the school system and works at alternative schools, yes, they're needed. I firmly believe that. However, some SROs are there and they help and they aid and they assist. And they become a part of the community, and our students know that they can go to them and talk to them and all of that. And then some SROs are there more as a true policing state. Mm-hmm. And I don't believe that a policing state needs to be inside a school. I don't. Mm-hmm. We know the frontal lobe isn't fully developed and all that, and the kids make stupid decisions, and sometimes those stupid decisions have major consequences. There's restorative practices. They're still kids. So that's my spill on that.
Yeah, I would encourage our listeners, we're not going to have the time to talk through all this today, but like Tashar said, 13th?
Mm-hmm. Or 13th.
Okay. It's on my list to watch. Look up school to prison pipeline, and UCLA is where a big study came out about that. And it's a pretty accessible piece of research that really outlines the problem of disproportionate third partying and what that does, especially to young Black men. And that stuff that really is enlightening. And the one thing I'll add on to that, and Tushar, you mentioned redlining. Do some research on redlining, on housing practices back in mid 19th century, and how that affected generational wealth, especially with people of color, African American people. So, Carla, I'll let you take the next question.
All right. Well, and I think just coming off of that, I hear people say, or I've heard people say, racism is in the past. It's not present. But as we're talking through these things, the more research I do on redlining, and the more stuff I watch and the more stories and Black people I listen to, it is not in the past at all. It is still very much a part of our present. And so, Tushar, do you have any resources, or what can we do, especially, let's start with adults, but what can we do to educate ourselves to be aware of what's going on in our system and world?
I'll share it with you. When y'all asked me about this conversation, I started pulling resources. So I have a whole Word document just full of places, links.
That we can link all these.
Mm-hmm. And, but there's a couple of pictures out there that, you know, the iceberg, and we also talk about the iceberg and like success and then all those. Well, there's one out there, a few out there about racism. And it says, racism white people see and feel like violates the line, and then what Black people and people of color experience every day. So recent events are just the things that have crossed white people's line of consciousness, where there's things like just like, I remember one time I was actually getting a storage unit, and someone said, how many kids do you have? I was like, none. And it's like, no, like you and your husband, like how many kids do y'all have? None. But just the assumption that, one, I didn't have kids. I mean, that I have kids, and two, that, oh no, okay, you might not have kids, but I know he has kids. It's just little things like that. I make it a point to, like, I have my doctorate. I don't doctor people, but I make it a point when I'm in a professional setting to say, no, put doctor in front of my name, because I worked hard for that. And I want other people to, one, I want other Black people to know, hey, I did it, you can too. But also, it's like, I need to prove myself going into the room to go ahead and dispel whatever preconceived notion someone might have, just off the top, if that makes sense. I've had parents tell me, I don't want you calling me. I want the white counselor to call me. You know, I've had, I've had, going into places and seeing Trump flags and MAGA flags and Confederate flags. I've had to go to places and I'm like, okay, I see, you know, just seeing what's around. I was like, okay, I know that I don't need to stop in this town. I know that based on what I'm seeing and the signs that I'm seeing that, nope, it might not be beneficial for me to stop here, and I won't, for my own safety. There's just a lot of covert racism that, unless you've been taught or experienced it, it goes unnoticed. It's the one time I had a coworker. It was a field trip, and a coworker said, "Hey, Ms. Jackson, I need you to be the angry Black woman on the trip and work with me on my guys who I know get in trouble." And I laughed it off at the time, but on the inside, I really was like, okay.
Yeah.
So things like that. I've been told I didn't get a job because I was too aggressive. Not assertive, aggressive. You're a good candidate, but you're a little too aggressive. Okay. So it's those things that wouldn't even ruffle a white person's feather, even if y'all were standing right there, because y'all probably would have never even noticed that it was a thing.
I would say too, you know, if anyone doubting the idea of white privilege, Carly, I can't speak for you, but I've never had to think about, is this a safe place for me to stop? And, you know, I don't look for signs, you know, that things are necessarily safe. I just make that assumption that, you know, this, I'll be welcome here. No one's going to second guess me being here. And I know from talking to you and talking to lots of my Black friends, that's not the case. Mm-hmm. For your experience.
I think, yeah, definitely think, look into white privilege. And I think I've seen several things that say, if you're tired of racism or you feel like you're having to learn about racism, that's white privilege. Mm-hmm. Because if you're Black, that's not something that you had to learn about. You have lived with that your whole life. And it's also something that you don't have the luxury to be like, all right, I'm going to turn that off of my feed now and I'm going to move on with my life. Mm-hmm. And so I just feel like there is so much white privilege, and that is a really hard thing to confront, but it's something that we do need to confront because it's there. And I would encourage, we'll post, I know Tashar, you have resources, but we'll post some books too and some mm-hmm. resources that would be good to read and just kind of go on a journey yourself.
A friend of mine, a really good friend of mine, a white young lady, she this morning or yesterday, she posted a blog and said, that was titled, I'm not a racist and other lies I tell myself. And she was talking about, and she and I are really good friends, but in her blog, she talks about, you know, I go on mission trips. I do this. I have Black friends and I listen to them. We have these conversations. We've always had these conversations, but yet this still happens, or yet this has happened and I didn't speak up, or this has happened and I didn't even notice. And, you know, and she's saying, because of my privilege and what my privilege allows me to see and not see, and allows me to say and not say, then yeah, I can still be the beneficiary of racist policies. I can still be a passive racist and calling herself out on it. And so I thought that was very, very brave of her to do that. And I just read that this morning. So.
And Tashar, I know you can't speak for everyone, but when it comes to right now, I'm seeing so many people speak out and post on social media and doing the Black box last week for Black Lives Matter. But what can especially white people do that is a step beyond just posting a status on social media? What would be helpful? What shows, no, we really do care and are trying to change?
Participating. Protesting is not for everybody. It's not. So I'm not going to say participating in protests, but participating in some way in protests. So whether that's contributing to verify fundraising things. I was recently at a protest and people were out there just passing out water, you know, doing that. I know people who just made signs. They didn't attend, but they made signs and gave them to other people to walk with. If you're a parent, making sure that the ideals that you say you're supporting, that you're giving them to your children. If you have children, are all their dolls white? Or do they have a coworker? She doesn't even know I feel this way, but she's white, and she put a video out of her daughter doing something. I don't know, but I noticed in the video that her daughter was playing with a Black doll, and that just touched my heart. And this was months ago. And I look at that person a totally different way. And not that I had a negative view of her, but it became a little more elevated view of her, because her daughter had a Black doll, and it was a Black doll that she was playing with, not just when it was sitting on the bed or whatever. Does your child have Black friends? Are those friends allowed over to the house when you have slumber parties? If you read the book, Why Are the Black Kids Sitting Together in the Cafeteria, and Other Stories on Race, I think that's what it's called, Other Discussions on Race, they talk about how kind of when puberty starts setting in, how you notice the change in the demographics of birthday parties, and how when they're younger, birthday parties are more diverse, racially and gender type. But the older kids get, the less diverse they become. And it becomes more single gendered, and it also becomes more racially specific. And because of parental fears. So it's like, you guys can celebrate and push us and all that, but what are you doing in your own home? Are you having the tough conversations in your own home? Are you calling your own family members out? It's easy to be general on social media, but are you being specific with your own? That's what really helps.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because this is probably kind of where we're going to land with this conversation today, kind of talking about the onset of puberty and beyond, where those, you know, our racial lines become more polarized. Mm-hmm. And we want to start, a big part of our audience is parents and helpers of teenagers. And let's talk about that a little bit, about what can a helper of a student do better when it comes to talking about race, being more of an ally for Black people. What are some things you think would be really helpful for a helper of a student as we try to do better at this?
I look at the race talk kind of like the sex talk. It's never just a big talk. It has to be continued conversations across time. It has to be age-appropriate conversations across time. And it has to be specific conversations where answer the question or the situation that's in front of you. Sometimes we want to have the big conversation. It's like, well, no, we just need to have the little nugget that's needed for right now. So another example I can give you from one of my groups is I had a student once, we were talking about interpersonal communication and conflict. And a student was talking about a conflict that they had with a parent. And the student said that they told their parent asked them to do something. And the student said, look at my skin. Do I look like I'm a slave? And so in the group, I mean, you could hear a pin drop, and all the students looked at me and the other facilitator, and who's Black, and to see how we would respond. And instead of freaking out, we asked questions. Well, what did you mean when you said that? Well, this student grows up and is affluent, and lived in the house where she had house management, and the people who were her house managers were Black and brown. And so that's the context of the world that she knows. And so we discussed that, and we explained, you know, why that could be offensive. And we had the students in the group explain how did they feel when she said that? What went through their mind? Because it was obvious that the whole group was affected by the statement. So we talked about it. And we have to be willing to talk about things and have those hard conversations. Mm. It's easy to say, be nice. It's inappropriate and easy to say, I'm colorblind. No, one, that's not reality. and two, that's not what we want to teach kids. We want to teach kids to value diversity. We want to teach kids the difference between diversity, inclusion, equity, equality, and equity. Because something can be diverse but not be inclusive. There can be equality without equity. And so we need to have those conversations. And it's about addressing what's present. So all this is going on in the news. Your kids have seen it. They've heard it. They have some kind of thoughts about it. Ask them how they feel, and then address what they say, and address it with grace because they're learning this too. So address it with grace, address it with facts, and address it with your own humility of saying, yeah, like, I don't know what to do in this situation either. I'm guilty of some of this stuff too, and I'm trying to get better. Like, be open and honest and have those conversations.
I just want to, encourage, like you said, students know that this is happening. They see it at school. they see it in the news, they see it on social media. And so asking questions of even how have you seen that take place and what is your experience with it? I know, obviously, I don't have teenagers. I have little kids, but it has made it with my 3-year-old. We're already having conversations about it and we're reading books and it makes the conversation much easier because we do have my husband is a basketball coach and we have his Black students in our home. We have Black friends in our home and it makes that conversation easier when I can say, hey, what about this person? And what do you think? And we love them. And we can talk about that conversation because there's relationship there. And so I just want to encourage especially if you're a parent, make sure that you have your children around Black people and take a look at who's in your life. And don't just say, well, we're going to talk about it, but we're not going to put our kids around them. Like you said, the sleepovers, make sure that you're asking those really hard questions of yourself before you talk to them about with your kids, because it's so much easier to have that conversation if there's context there, if there's relationship there, if your actions as a family are backing that up.
What would you do if your child came home with a significant other who was Black? Mm-hmm. Ask yourself that question.
Right.
Well, we really appreciate this conversation. I've been really excited to have it with you because, like we said earlier, we have a relationship with you, and we know we can talk about these things. And so, thank you, and on behalf of our audience, who I know they choose to listen to this is something that they want to know more about and to be a better ally to the Black community. And so, I feel like what we've heard today, we can really. We can do a lot better with that. So thank you so much, Tashara. We're going to put some links to your pages. You want to talk a little bit about the Hope Pusher and some of the things you're doing with that?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, please do.
I'm excited. Okay. So I have a website. It's thehopepusher.com. And my passion is working with teens and young adults who have substance use behaviors. Are associated at risk behaviors and helping them figure out life and maneuver through life and learn some healthier choices. It's also working with the families and the educators who work with those students, not even just educators, the families and the caregivers who work with those students, whether they're educators, mentors, whatever. So I do parenting classes, I do counseling, individual and group counseling, coaching, I do consultation, just to work specifically with that population. I've been blessed to figure out my calling. And so that's what I do. And I'm always open. I'll give any, if you go to my website, you can do a 15-minute free consultation with me. Just sign up for it, and we can go from there.
Well, thank you so much for your time today. On behalf of Teen Life, we're looking forward to where this conversation takes us, so we really appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate the ask.